Welcome back to TechNet Radio. We're here for part 5 of the Building a Private Cloud with System Center 2012 SP1 series. And in today's episode, Keith Mayer and Young Cho show us how to configure Network Fabric and Virtual Machine Manager. Tune in for this demo-heavy session as they show us how to architect our physical networks and then bring them into VMM as they help us define our logical and VM networks and then create and assign our switches and gateways. Keith, the mic is yours.
Hey everybody, welcome back to episode 5 in our Building Your Private Cloud series on TechNet Radio. In the last 4 episodes, we've started off looking at what is a private cloud. We progressed into building out the foundational infrastructure of our private cloud, leveraging Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V Server 2012 for Hyper-V host clusters and file server clusters. And then we moved on into installing our System Center 2012 VMM management server. And in the last episode, bringing our storage in, whether it's block-level storage or SMB3.0 shared file storage, into VMM so we can begin to manage from a storage perspective. So far in our private cloud series, we've been really over on this right half of our screen here, taking a look at how we can take our infrastructure components, which could be pretty disparate infrastructure. It could be a bunch of different hypervisor hosts ranging from Hyper-V to VMware to Citrix. It could be a lot of different networks and networking components physically, a lot of different storage components. And what we've really been focusing on is how we can leverage System Center 2012 Virtual Machine Manager as our initial tooling to start bringing all of those hardware assets into a more comprehensive private cloud fabric. And once we have that done, we'll be progressing through this series to also look at ways that we can then create private clouds on top of that fabric and abstract our underlying infrastructure with pools of resources that we can place application services on top of and delegate support and access out to various people within our IT department or in the various business units of our organization. So today we're going to be talking about networking. Networking is a big piece of what makes everything work in a private cloud environment, and it's something that can have a lot of complexity associated with it. I'm sure even in your current data center environments today, many of you have different physical networks that are used in your data center for a variety of purposes, for storage, for management, for client access to applications and whatnot. And so we'll be looking at 2 aspects as we walk through the process of building out our networks. First, what are some of the ways that we want to architect our physical network? And secondly, then, once we have our physical network architected, how do we bring that into Virtual Machine Manager? So before we get started, just a quick introduction. My name is Keith Mayer. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft in the U.S., and I have with me back again to help us out as we step through this process, Young. Hi, Young. Good morning. How are you?
This is Young Cho again from the great state of North Carolina. Hello, everyone.
Awesome. Well, Young, in the last few episodes, we've stepped through the process of building out our System Center 2012 Service Pack 1 VMM infrastructure. And along the way, in terms of networking, we looked at a logical view of how VMM handles networking, where we've got our management server. And from a networking perspective, as we follow this green line out of our VMM management servers, we've got agents that are running out on our Hyper-V or other virtualization hosts. We've got networking down to the SMIS or SMP providers on our storage. We've got networking that's established down to various network components as well. So that's kind of the logical view. But we also looked at, in episode 2, a little bit of the physical view. And I wanted to dip into that in a little more detail as well, because what I find when I'm talking to a lot of IT pros is that a lot of them are looking at physical networking kind of twofold. First, how do I take the physical networks that I have today and be able to better manage them as part of my private cloud? And then secondly, as I go forward, how do I think about consolidating that complexity at a physical layer, perhaps down into fewer high-speed resilient network connections, and then still leverage them for all the various purposes. And, you know, as I talk with IT pros and we look at putting in place a scale-up or scale-out architecture, you know, what's really become the realization is that we generally end up with two different collections of networks within our data center environment when we start thinking about extending virtualization into a private cloud foundation. We have those networks that we call data center networks that are used for our virtualization hosts to communicate across a cluster and exchange heartbeat information, to live migrate running VMs from host to host, to access their storage for that the VMs are stored on, and for us as IT pros to do host management. And then we also have one or more networks that are used as client networks, networks that are used for the client devices to access the running virtual machines. And I see more and more environments separating these out from an isolation standpoint so that they can place certain bandwidth guarantees and policies on their back-end data center networks that are completely isolated away from those, think of them as front-end client networks that client workstations are using to access the applications running on virtual machines so that they don't have to worry about somebody going into a VM and somehow getting access to the critical back-end infrastructure that everything's running on top of. And I've seen IT pros run these networks over either standard 1 gig Ethernet using our integrated network teaming support in Windows Server 2012, or more and more so, I see a lot of interest as server and network refreshes start occurring of leveraging 10 gig Ethernet for even faster pipes into the server. So you may have a configuration where each of our servers have a couple 10 gig Ethernet NICs for the back-end network and a couple 1 or 10 gig Ethernet NICs for the front-end network. And then we use network teaming to consolidate those down into a resilient bundle. So if one NIC or cable fails, it'll fail over. When both are up and running, we can take advantage of the bandwidth of both of them. And then use some techniques to split those consolidated networks out across these various traffic workloads, which could be the back-end workloads that we talked about earlier across our back-end networks, or various client virtual machine workloads across virtualized networks that our virtual machines are running on. Young, from your standpoint, does this make sense? Do you see IT pros leveraging other decision points in their physical network infrastructure as well?
Well, actually, how about this? Let me put a different spin on this. If you can go back to the previous slide.
Yep, definitely.
Right. And so actually, this is a very nice slide, by the way. You know, you did a great job, Keith, to show some really important concept here. Right here, you're showing this the three resource pool. You know, the compute, the network, the storage, the network. The three important resource pool that we're talking about collectively, we call them fabric, right? And in previous episode, you talk about, you know, building the storage virtualization solution, which is the storage piece of it, and now you move into the network. Right, and so when it comes to these three resource pools, they're all based upon the virtualization solution. So we have, compute power, we have the server virtualization, which is where you talk about all these servers, all these virtual machines. And then last episode, you talk about the storage, right? You have different storage virtualization solution you bring into the VMM. Now we move to the next part is we talk about the network virtualization, right? And so it's the same virtualization concept that applies to all these three resource pools. Now, for instance, for server virtualization, we know we're running multiple instances on the same server hardware, right? So apply that to network virtualization. We are trying to provide an abstraction such that we will have multiple subnets or multiple network, but they are running on the same network infrastructure. That's what we're trying to achieve, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you move to the next slide, you actually showing like the underlying, you know, some of the how we connect them, how we architect them, and you mentioned, you know, from the client view, you know, that's kind of one type of network to access the virtual machine. But underlying, under the hood, in the fabric, I have another, you know, access the cluster and all that. And this is really a very important concept for us to understand that, you know, under the hood, below the fabric, you know, we see all this physical construct, the clustering, the, you know, different kind of connection that we have. But above the abstract, as far as the user is concerned, it's persistent, right? If I have a 10.0.0 network, above the network virtualization, you can move me anywhere, and I can still maintain the same, you know, network configuration, which is extremely important because in a cloud environment, we want to be able to either from the system management software like System Center, or when you need it, then you know, manually to move some of the workload, right? And that network virtualization provides us that transparency. And if you look at the three resource pool, the server virtualization or the compute piece give us the CPU power to execute, you know, all this computing instruction. The storage is where we store our virtual machine, our data, our application, and then we have this network to kind of glue everything together. So I think all three of them combined, you know, it is what the kind of the guts of the cloud computing, of the private cloud we're trying to build.
Yep, no, definitely, definitely. And when we think about this type of structure then, you know, I see you had mentioned network virtualization, which is actually a new feature in Service Pack 1 for being able to take a physical network and virtualize it into multiple virtual subnets. I see a lot of interest from IT pros around network virtualization, but I also see a lot of confusion out there as to when to use network virtualization and when to use traditional VLANs. A lot of IT pros have used VLANs in their environment to isolate at a switch level network traffic between various consolidated subnets in the past. And our best practice guidance is really around continuing to leverage VLANs for those back-end networks, those what we're calling data center networks, for clustering, for live migration, for storage, for host management. Because those networks, when they're put in place, they have very fixed configurations. We don't generally build new storage and new host management and new live migration networks on the fly like we do over on this client VM side. You know, for different collections of VMs, we may decide on the flip side that as those VMs are connecting to client networks, we want one set of VMs to connect to one isolated network and another set of VMs to connect to another isolated network to separate out network traffic on a departmental basis, for instance, or if we're in a hosting provider environment, they may use that to separate out virtual networks for VMs that are managed by individual customers as different tenants of their environment. So we continue to use VLANs on the back-end networks because those are fixed, they're well understood, there's a lot of control that we have by leveraging VLANs together with hosts and switches that support VLANing. And then we use the new network virtualization capability to provide a more dynamic isolated virtual network capability for those front-end networks that our virtualization hosts are using to expose client devices to the running virtual machines. So let's take a look at how we configure these items in VMM and build this out as part of our network fabric. So the first step in VMM is to define logical networks. And the logical networks we're going to define are twofold. We're going to define one logical network for the data center networks, and then within that logical network, we'll have isolated VLANs for clustering, for live migration, for storage, for host management, for instance. And then we'll define a second logical network for our client VM traffic. We'll call that the provider network because it's providing a logical network that one or more client virtual networks can run on top of. For each of these networks, we'll define network site and subnet information that bind these logical networks to a particular subnet scheme on our physical infrastructure. And then if we're not using DHCP, if we're using static addressing for the components on these logical networks, we can create IP pools that allow VMM to statically assign from a pool of IP addresses valid addresses that aren't currently in use. So let's do that piece first, and then we'll come back around and we'll start building these other components. So first step, defining two logical networks, one for our data center, one for our provider. Well, hey, Young, here we are back in our demo environment where we previously installed Virtual Machine Manager, and we're still in that fabric area. because today we're building out our network fabric. So in Virtual Machine Manager, I've clicked on the Fabric Application Workspace down at the bottom on the left, and that opens up my Fabric Navigation Panel. And you'll see I've expanded out the networking pieces. So you see all the various networking components that we have in VMM. And first thing we're going to do is create two logical networks, one for our back-end data center network, and then one for our front-end client VM network. And we'll do that just by using our ribbon bar and clicking on Create Logical Network. So it'll ask us to give this logical network a name. So we'll call this Data Center Network. We could optionally put a description down to further describe it. And then what I'm going to do is there's this new checkbox option here that says network sites within this logical network are not connected. I'm going to check that box because typically on back-end networks, we want to keep our storage, our clustering, our live migration, and our host management VLANs all separate from one another. We don't route between them. And this is actually a new feature of Service Pack 1 to be able to identify multiple network sites and associated subnets that are part of an overall logical network but aren't routed back and forth between them. Prior version before SP1, we didn't have that capability. In addition, if I'm using not just VLAN support, but private VLAN support. So if I'm using that on some of my intelligent switches with Hyper-V hosts to further segment or sub-segment a VLAN out, I can additionally check the box telling VMM that my logical network contains private VLANs, sort of VLANs within a VLAN type of thing. In my case, I'm just going to use normal VLANs, so I'll go ahead and just leave my first checkbox selected. I'll click Next, and now within this one logical network, I need to add in the network site definitions that have subnet ranges for each of the VLANs that I'm going to be using. So I'm going to add this in as a particular network site, and so we'll say that this is my data center network for... Let's do the storage traffic first, so I'll key in storage, and I'm going to associate this logical network definition so that it can be used with any of my hosts, and what I'm going to do is insert a row and have in here my VLAN information for my storage subnet. So we'll say that this is, maybe I'm going to use subnet 10 for storage, for instance, and that might be running on a particular storage subnet. So I'm just going to key in that storage subnet information, /24 mask. We'll go ahead and insert that. And I'll add in my sites for each of my other on the back-end network. So we'll say clustering is next, and we'll associate that with all hosts, and then I'll insert a row. We'll say for clustering I'm going to use VLAN 9, for instance, and we'll give it a unique subnet. And of course I'd want to plan out all of my IP subnetting first and all of my VLAN IDs before getting into this interface so that I can properly call out all of these pieces. And let's see, we'll add in one more for host management. And then I'll say all of my host management, that's going to go over VLAN 5. And that's going to be 2.0 with a /24 mask. And I could keep adding additional VLANs for all of the back-end traffic. So I could add a VLAN for live migration. I could add a VLAN for particular backup, you know, for network backups and whatnot, whatever made sense in my environment. So I'll go ahead and insert that last row, click Next, click Finish, and it'll go through the process now of building out my first logical network. So there's my data center network. So for my back-end data center network, I use traditional VLANs. I create a separate site and subnet for each of those VLANs, and I tag it as a network that does not have routing back and forth between those sites and subnets. Now for my front-end network, I'll create a logical network there, and we'll call this my client network. And this is the network that my client VMs are going to attach to. is what we called our provider network. It's providing the network for our clients. And we could put a description in as well. Now, in this case, though, for my virtual machines, I may have a very dynamic population of virtual machines that over time need to be spun up on various isolated networks. Rather than using VLANs for this particular for our client VMs, instead, I'm going to check the option to allow me to use network virtualization. What that allows me to do is create literally an unlimited number of virtualized networks that isolate different collections of virtual machines from one another, and without having me need to maintain a growing set of VLANs that are out in my network. Because, you know, as we start thinking about VLAN management, it's okay when we have a small number of pretty static VLANs, like we do in our back-end data center networks, but when we have this need to have potentially dynamic VLANs, essentially dynamic isolated networks springing up as more virtual machines and application services are provisioned, network virtualization gives us the capability to do that, and it's all handled by Service Pack 1 of System Center 2012 working together with Windows Server 2012. The cool thing about network virtualization is we can do all that without really any involvement from the switches to which everything's connected. We don't need intelligent switches that understand anything special, because network virtualization is handled entirely by System Center 2012 SP1 by managing all of the Windows Server 2012 hosts. Windows Server 2012 has support for software-defined networking and network virtualization built into it. So we'll use network virtualization on our client network. I'll click Next. Now on our network site page, we'll add in a single network site, and we're just going to leave it at the default VLAN because we're not using VLANs, and we'll say that we're going to use a separate physical subnet that our virtual subnets will all ride on top of. So I'm going to call this my client network for VMs, and I'll go ahead and insert that and click Next, Finish, and we'll get a new client network now. So now we've got our two logical networks defined, our back-end network for our data center components that leverages traditional VLANs, our front-end network for our client components that leverages network virtualization. Young, what do you think about that? Any questions on that or observations as we went along?
I think an important concept here is you point out, like, you know, the client network, the data center network. I think it's really crucial for us to recognize the fact that the data center network is really more on the infrastructure, how you actually behind the scene connect them. And the client network is just what your customer sees. And what they need is really they only see their application. So for them, it's a persistent network configuration stay in place, and behind the scene how you go through all these complexities to connect them is through that data network. And I think that's a very important concept right there. And also you mentioned, you know, the front end, the client network, the back end, the data center network, and I kind of spin it in a different way. I say, you know what, the fabric, the abstraction are with under the fabric, that is your data center network, how we glue those physical devices and you know, different virtualization solution all together. And above the fabric, that's your client network. That's what they see. You know, they don't care about all this complexity you have. I just want my own little network configuration, and that's what I see, and that's what I'm going to use.
Yep, definitely. Now, the one last step that we have is once our logical networks are defined, if we want to use static addressing within those networks, we can create an IP pool that VMM uses for static addressing as it's provisioning new components. So it'll automatically pull the next available address out of the pool and use it to provision components on our fabric that we're setting up. So if we go ahead and click on our data center network first and then create IP pool, that'll allow us to step through the process of creating a data center IP pool. And we'll select our logical network, data center network. I'll click Next. And then we'll go through the process of telling it to use an existing site. So we'll say that we're going to create an IP pool for our host management, for instance. then click Next. And then we can specify a pool that it'll use. So we can have anything that's a valid address within that range. So I'll just leave the whole range in. If we had any addresses that were already in use in that range, we could exclude them down below. And as I step through the process, it's also going to ask me some very DHCP-like information, like gateway, DNS, WINS information, and whatnot. So I can go ahead and insert a default gateway address on this particular IP pool that will be statically assigned to new components. So I can do 192.168.242.1, we'll say, is our default gateway. And then for DNS, as we click Next, that out. There we go. If we click Next, we can insert DNS servers. 168.242.14, we'll say, is our DNS servers. Yep. And got a blank row in there as well. And go ahead and click Next and then Finish. And we could do that same pooling for each of our other sites and subnets. I won't go through that process now on our data center side. And then we can do the same thing for our client network. So we can create an IP pool, and we'll call this the client IP pool on our client network. Click Next, specify our network site, and then specify our valid address range. And again, we could configure our gateway, DNS, and WINS information just like before. I'm just going to leave those blank just so we can step through the process of configuring out that client IP pool. Okay, great. So we've gone through the process of defining our logical networks. We've seen how to create IP pools if we want to use static addressing from within VMM. So next up is defining VM networks. So we've just gone through the process of defining our logical networks. And in doing so, we created a logical network for our data center, a logical network for our client or provider that is going to be used for our VMs that we're ultimately going to be hosting in our private cloud. We defined network sites and subnets. We created IP pools. And all of this is really mapping logically to our underlying physical network infrastructure. So it maps down to the particular VLANs that are mapped into our data center network. It maps into the particular physical subnet that we're going to be running network virtualization on top of in terms of our client provider networks. The next step is really defining our VM networks. The VM networks allow us to link these logical network definitions into networks that can be connected in through Hyper-V switches that are running on our Windows Server 2012 hosts or Hyper-V hosts and take advantage of connectivity to these underlying physical networks. So defining VM networks are next, and we're going to define one VM network per VLAN and one VM network per virtualized network. So the idea on the provider or client networks where we're using network virtualization is by using network virtualization, we can dynamically provision additional networks virtualized for our VMs. On that side, we do that by creating multiple VM networks, one for each collection of virtual machines that we want to have on an isolated network, and then extend that VM network out to our application services, out to our VMs or whatnot, as we're placing them on those various networks. So let's go through the process of creating VM networks next. So here we are back in System Center 2012, Virtual Machine Manager SP1, and up until now, most of what we've been doing has been related to our physical fabric components, and so we've been on the fabric application workspace within our VMM management console. But what we're going to be doing now is starting to transition over into that virtualized world from a networking standpoint as we create our VM networks. And so we're going to be moving over to the VMs and services application workspace because that's where the components that are related to our virtualized world live. Components like clouds and VMs, VMs and hosts that run those VMs. So we're going to be going into our VM networks and creating multiple VM networks, one per VLAN and one per virtualized network that we want to expose to our VMs. These VM networks are ultimately for the client or provider VM networks, they're ultimately going to be the networks that our virtual machines are connected to. So a big change with Service Pack 1 of System Center 2012 Virtual Machine Manager is that we no longer connect virtual machines directly to logical networks. Instead, we connect virtual machines to virtual networks called VMNets, and then those VMNets in turn are extended through to the logical networks. That provides us with another layer of abstraction that we can use to implement network virtualization. So let's see how that works. So here we are in our VMs and Services application workspace. I'm going to click on VM Networks. And if I right-click here, you'll see I have my Create VM Network option. I also have that up on my ribbon bar up at the top. Choosing either option allows me to do the same thing. So it gives me the choice of specifying a new name and description for my VM network, and then picking the associated logical network. So I'm going to choose Data Center Network first, and we'll set up a VM net for each of our Data Center Network VLANs that we created previously. So storage was one of those. So we'll type in storage as our name. We'll connect that to our data center network. When we click next, it'll allow us to pick the particular VLAN that we were on for the storage. So in this case, it's VLAN 10. And there's our subnet that we had previously put in at the logical network level. Go ahead and click next, finish. I'll create another VM network now for following the same process for my additional data center networks. So we'll say live migration. Click next. Specify the VLAN. And actually, I didn't have live migration. We didn't. That was one that we didn't define. So let's pick host management instead. So I'll pick host management. Click next. And then specify the VLAN for host management. And then we'll create one last VM network for our cluster network, data center network, isolation, specify a VLAN, pick it on the cluster logical network VLAN. So now we've got our data center related VM networks exposed. And ultimately what will happen is as we connect these in to our Hyper-V hosts, it will allow one consolidated data center network to then be split off into separate VLANs for cluster, host management, and storage traffic. So we'll see separate logical interfaces that are provided for each of those VLANs that's consolidated through our data center interfaces or teams of interfaces. Now we have to create, in addition to our data center VM networks, we have to create our client VM networks. So I'll create VM network once more. And when I select client network, you'll notice there's some additional choices here for VM subnets and gateway, for instance, because I've enabled network virtualization on the client logical network. So you'll see when I select data center, VM subnets and gateway goes away. When I select the client network, those come back. Those choices are only valid if I'm using network virtualization. So we'll say that this is going to be a VM network for our finance department. So we'll put in finance. I'll attach this VM network to our logical client network. But now we're going to use isolation with Hyper-V network virtualization. So we're going to use a virtualized IPv4 IP address protocol on top of our physical addressing scheme in the logical network. This allows us to have multiple subnets all virtualized and logically running on top of a single physical subnet that we're routing out to our client devices. So we'll isolate using Hyper-V network virtualization. I'll click next. And now we'll specify the information for our virtualized networks. So remember, we're using 192.168.x.x as part of our physical strategy. We could use a completely different logical virtualized subnet strategy for our VM subnets. So I'm going to use 10.1.0.0 with a slash 16 mask. And actually, we'll give that as the first our name, our descriptive name. So we'll say that this is the VM subnet for finance. So we'll say VM subnet finance. And then the actual subnet will be 10.2.0.0/16mask. And if we had additional subnets that we wanted to virtualize and associate, we could add those in as well. In my case, I don't, so I'll click next. Now, these virtualized networks at some point are going to need to have connectivity with a physical network. Your clients or other hosts that they're accessing might be living on a physical network. And we do that type of connectivity through a network virtualization gateway. Now, we don't have any gateways configured currently. So what you'll see is that the options for the gateway are grayed out. Later on, towards the end of our session today, I'll show you how we'll add a gateway in, and then we'll be able to come back in and see where we connect that into a VM network to provide essentially routing from the virtualized network world that we're building on top of our physical network for these VMs and the physical network world that other hosts or clients that are not virtualized from a networking standpoint are connected to. So for now, I'm just going to say no connectivity. And if we had additional virtualized networks that we wanted to add for each of our other business units, departments, customers, tenants, we could keep going through that same process as well. So Young, what do you think? Pretty straightforward as far as creating the VM networks. Any observations along the way?
It's probably pretty straightforward for you, but I think, you know, if you're doing this for the first time, if you don't do this on a daily basis, this is something that I think we do need to invest the time. And also, I like the way you make it a very, in some way, mechanical and operational. That you started defining as a data center network and also the client network. You know, that separation is really important. And on individually, you know, you define VLAN, you define the virtual machine network. I mean, that building blocks, that methodical approach is really important, as opposed to if you're not familiar with it, you come in and you started, you know, building this and building that and not have a kind of overall ideal in terms of exactly what we're trying to achieve. That can be very easily, you will get lost in the process. And also, I don't know, Keith, and quite frankly, Keith, you know how many times I have been lost, and I have to kind of ping you and say, hey, Keith, I can't get this to work, right? So as you define that, there's so many links, right, with each other. And if later, when you actually deploy something, and then you say, well, this is not working, so I need to delete it, you have to go back and trace back on what you've been defined and individual delete it, because they're all depending on each other. I guess the point I want to make is, you know, we need to kind of review the process that you have just executed, really get familiar with it and make it very methodical and predictable process in order to make this network virtualization piece successful. And the fact that you defined started with a 192.168 and then you move above the abstraction and started with a 10.02 or something, I think that's the historic moment that we're experiencing, right? That's so exciting. That's a network virtualization right in front of our face, and I think that this is just good stuff.
Yeah, great, definitely. And to your point, you know, the VMM console makes clicking around very easy to do for configuring these pieces, but there's a lot of background concepts that we're going through as we're clicking on logical networks and IP pools and VM networks and whatnot. And I relate it back really to the preparation steps back to building out when we all first started building out physical network environments. You know, we wouldn't just go and throw a bunch of switches in a rack and start configuring them and VLANing them off and plugging cables in. We'd have a very logical, methodical approach to first planning out the subnetting scheme, planning out our routing protocols, planning out our VLAN boundaries, our switch and switch port configurations. And before we implement anything, we have it all planned and documented, and we're able to review it as a team with the rest of our network and storage and virtualization teams to make changes and whatnot. And then that becomes the blueprint for starting to implement inside the VMM console, because it then by implementing from a plan, you then have a more logical progression. Otherwise, you can see it could be very easy to get lost in the console if you don't have that starting blueprint to begin with. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
So we've just gone through the process of defining our logical networks and then the VM networks on top of those logical networks. And now we're going to move into the process of creating logical switches in VMM. Logical switches are really a fascinating area to me in VMM, because in the past, prior to Service Pack 1, creating Hyper-V switches really required us to do that on that switch configuration on a host by host by host basis, and there's a lot of chance for errors or omissions in terms of different policies or configurations. Now what we have is the ability to create a logical switch as essentially a distributed switch definition in VMM that has a consistent set of port profiles for the switch ports, where we can associate particular bandwidth settings, particular QoS settings and whatnot, and classifications that allow us to take common classifications regardless of where those switch definitions are and apply them, much the same way that we created storage classifications in episode 4 for the storage we were setting up. Once we've created our port profiles and port classifications, though, and associated those to a logical switch, we can also bring in a standard set of virtual switch extensions. With the Hyper-V switch that we have in Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V Server 2012, the switches are what we call extensible switches. They allow us to add in third-party extensions from our partner community to provide more detailed routing capabilities, ACL capabilities, bandwidth control or monitoring capabilities, firewall capabilities, for instance. So by leveraging these extensions, if we have a standard set that we're using in our environment, we can add them into our logical switch definition once, and then as we assign that logical switch to each of our hosts, we have the ability to ensure that there's some consistency. We also have the ability to go back and determine, once a logical switch is assigned to a host, if anybody's gone to that host and undone any of our logical switch configurations, we have a compliance check that we can do to make sure that all of our network settings on the logical switch are in compliance on each of our hosts that are part of our private cloud foundation. Okay. Well, Young, from your standpoint, do you see a lot of excitement around the new logical switch support in SP1 as well?
I think the logical switch is exciting if you know what it is right now. Let me ask you a question. When I install VMM, and I did see some switch there already, is that the same thing with the logical switch or is it something different?
So when you install VMM and bring in your Hyper-V hosts by default, it automatically brings in the logical networks and creates VM networks for it and stitches it all together for you. But it does that using standard network switches that are assigned on a Hyper-V host by Hyper-V host basis. So the logical switches give you an ability to go up a level, and instead of defining switch capabilities on a host by host basis, you can define them once in your VMM console and then push them out essentially to all of your hosts and host groups as part of a standard switch configuration.
Cool. And so in other words, the logical switch give me some, I can build some consistency across different networks.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely. And then when we go and take that consistent logical switch definition and begin assigning it to each of our hosts, it brings through the port profiles, the port classifications, the switch extensions, and during that assignment process of assigning a logical switch to a host, that's where we tie together all of what we've been doing up to this point with logical and VM networks to be able to assign, hey, on this logical switch, as we're assigning it to this host, here's the network adapters that we're physically going to connect the logical switch to. We'll team them up, and then here's the virtual switch ports that we'll have coming off of that logical switch as it's implemented on a host-by-host basis. Would you like to see how that works in VMM?
Absolutely.
You're going to say, yeah, you talk a lot. I want to see it.
Okay. Proof is in the pudding, right? Great. Okay. So here we are back again in our Virtual Machine Manager console, Young, and we're still in the VMs and services workspace of our VMM console. That's where we were to create our VM networks. And our next step is to create logical switches for our data, one logical switch for our data center network, one logical switch for our client VM network, that we can glue all these different networking components together and make them work when we assign them to one or more hosts. So logical switches are part of our physical fabric. So we're going to go back over to the fabric workspace again. So down in the lower left-hand corner of our navigation pane, I'll click on the Fabric Application Workspace, and you'll see that under networking, That's where I have my logical switches, and I don't have any logical switches that are currently defined in my environment. When I initially bring in my Hyper-V hosts or Windows Server hosts, it creates standalone switches that are, brings in the standalone switches that already existed on those hosts, but doesn't automatically create any logical switches for me. So to create a new logical switch, I can either click on the Create Logical Switch button on our ribbon bar, or I can right-click on Logical Switches in the navigation pane and select Create Logical Switch. And it gives me a little bit of reading material to bring me up to speed on exactly what a logical switch is and which components I need to have already in place. So it tells me before creating a logical switch, create your logical networks and define the network sites. We've already done that. If you're using Hyper-V virtual switch extensions, we need to install those virtual switch extensions on our VMM management server. We're not going to use any virtual switch extensions. If we had any, we would install them and they would appear under our switch extension managers area right up here. And then we need to create native port profiles for virtual adapters that will be used for defining the port settings. So this last step, step four, is something that we have not done yet. So I like to use this getting started screen as a good checklist to see, hey, is there anything that we need to do that we haven't done yet? Essentially, we need to create a couple port profiles for what we call uplink ports. Those are the ports into our logical switch that will ultimately be connected to physical adapters on the network when we assign this logical switch definition to our hosts. So before going further, I'm just going to temporarily cancel out of this wizard because it warned me. I'm going to go over to native port profiles, and you'll see that there's a variety of port profiles that are used for, that are already created by default for virtual adapters off our logical switch for things like live migration and iSCSI and whatnot. But what we need to create is we need to create a port profile for uplink adapters. They're not created by default. So I'm going to right-click on my Native Port Profiles node, create the Native Port Profile. And as I step through this process, it's going to ask me some questions about how to configure the uplink ports for any physical adapters that will be attached to this logical switch definition. So first I have to give it a name, so I'll call it uplink ports for data center. And I can put a description in. I'm going to specify that I'm creating an uplink port profile, and it automatically allows me to determine how I'm going to use network teaming. So remember, we talked about the built-in network teaming in Windows Server 2012. What this allows me to do is to associate the uplink port with a particular load balancing algorithm and teaming mode. Now, for my back-end data center network, I probably want to use a teaming mode that's oriented towards transport ports because that's going to give me better load balancing of my backend traffic. If I was creating an uplink port profile for the logical switch that's going to be on my client network, then I'd want to use a load balancing algorithm, typically of Hyper-V port, because that way it'll balance my Hyper-V VM traffic across all the physical adapters that are in that client-side network, that provider network. So in my case, we're doing the data center network, so I'm going to define that as transport ports for my load balancing algorithm. And if for my teaming mode, if I have non-intelligent switches, I can use the switch independent teaming mode. If I have intelligent switches, I can use either LACP or static, depending on how teaming is configured on my intelligent switches, in a static manner or in a dynamic manner using the link aggregation control protocol. So for me, I've got just some non-intelligent switches in my lab environment, so I'll use switch independent. I'll click next. And now it's going to ask me to select the network sites that are supported by this uplink port profile. So I'm going to check all of those network location, network sites, because ultimately these will all be teamed. These will be VLANs that are all teamed under a common set of uplinks. I'll go ahead and click next and then finish. And now I need to create one more uplink port for my client network switch. So I'll say uplink for client. And here we're going to use an uplink port profile that's using Hyper-V port, because this is the network that our VM traffic will be running over. I'll click Next. And now what we'll do is we'll select Client VM Network and enable Windows Network Virtualization, because we're virtualizing over that particular uplink port. So I'll click Next, click Finish. And now I've got two different uplink ports defined, one that'll attach to my logical switch for the data center and one that'll attach to my logical switch for the client network. So if we go over to logical switches now, I can create a new logical switch just like before. We can step through our getting started. We'll say that this is our data center logical switch. And we can provide a description. And if we're using network adapters on our host servers that support single root I/O virtualization, that's an hardware offload technology for better network performance, we can also check this option to enable this logical switch to use single root I/O virtualization, or SRIOV. If we're not using adapters that support that hardware feature, we can leave it unchecked. Note that you can only enable SRIOV when creating a logical switch, so you want to pay attention to this and check your adapter hardware when you're setting up your logical switches. If I had any additional switch extensions, I can check those off here. When I click Next, I can specify my uplink port definition. So here I'm going to say I'm using teaming for my uplink port. I'm going to go ahead and add in the uplink for my data center network. Click Next. And now I've got classifications that I can add in for the various virtual ports on this switch. So these will be the VLANs that are coming off of this data center logical switch. So I can add in, if I browse out here, I can add in my host management port classification, and then connect that to my host management port profile, and add in my cluster port classification, and connect that to my cluster port profile, and add in my storage classification and connect that up to my storage. I could keep going if I had additional VLANs and whatnot that I wanted to split out. I can go ahead and click Next, click Finish, and now I'll have my data center switch created. Now I can go ahead and do the same steps but create my client switch instead for my client network. So let's say this is my client VM switch, and I'll click Next. I'll accept the default extensions. I'm going to team my uplinks out of this switch into the physical world, and I'll use my uplink for the client network. It sees that I already used my uplink for the data center network, so I selected the other. And now for my virtual ports, I've got port classifications by default that allow me to also set up port classifications for VMs that require low bandwidth, high bandwidth, or medium bandwidth as well. So these are just tags that I can use to describe the level of network I/O that's coming out of those VMs. If I wanted to create my own tags, my own additional port classifications, I can create them right here by using the Create Port Classification. So we'll say these are a lot of medium bandwidth VMs. So we'll use our medium bandwidth port classification, and we'll tie that to a virtual adapter port profile for medium bandwidth. So these adapter port profiles are all included by default with VMM when you initially install it. Those were virtual adapter port profiles we were looking at a little earlier. And what the VMM team has done is work closely with the Hyper-V and Windows Server team to take each of these classifications and port profiles and associate them with different types of bandwidth weightings. So if I just finish creating my client VM switch and we take a look at those native port profiles again, we'll see that under each of these default profiles, we've got certain offload settings that are in place, security settings, and bandwidth settings. And so each of these port profiles has their own bandwidth weighting, so that if we're taking multiple virtual ports and sending them as separate VLANs or virtualized networks across the same physical adapters. We can have different weightings for things like low bandwidth adapters versus live migration or iSCSI or whatnot. So they already have default bandwidth weightings in here to try to vary that bandwidth back and forth. And we can create our own port profiles for our virtual adapters if we had different weightings we wanted to use in our environment. But in my case, I'm just going to go with the defaults because they're pretty logically configured. So now we've just created our two logical switches for data center and client VM and associated them with the particular port classifications and port profiles. Now it's time to attach those switches into one or more of our hosts. So I'm just going to select one of my hosts that has some available physical network adapters that I want to attach these switches to. I'm going to right-click, drop into the properties of that host, and I'm just going to step down to virtual switches. And these are the virtual switches that you may have seen a little earlier, Young, when you were talking about the switches that automatically came in. VMM brings those in as standard switches that are on a host-by-host basis, part of the original Hyper-V host's configuration. What we want to do is we want to attach this host to the new logical switch definition that we had previously defined. And so I'm just going to say new logical switch, and we'll just step through one half of the process. Normally, I would create a logical switch for both my client VM and my data center environment. So I'm going to create my data center switch. We'll add in a couple ports for my uplink that I'm teaming together. And you'll notice that as it brought this across, it brought in the uplink ports for my data center that were previously defined in the data center logical switch. And then I'm going to add in my virtual adapters. So I would add in each of my virtual adapters. I'll add in the one for host management here, and then we can see the process. So I'll browse out and select the host management VM network that I had previously defined. Brings in automatically the subnet information and the VLAN information. It also brings in the IP address configuration, whether it's DHCP or using a static pool of addresses. And then I can specify my port profile that was previously associated with the logical switch by selecting the appropriate port classification. And as I go through the process, I could go ahead and click OK, add additional network virtual adapters in for each of those other interfaces for clustering, for storage, for live migration and whatnot. And then I go through the same process of adding in my logical switch onto the same host for my client network as well. So I won't go through all those steps today, just from a time standpoint. I'm going to go ahead and click OK and specify to save that change, and we'll go ahead and process that change out. As we went through that process, Young, any questions or observations from your standpoint?
I think, you know, I just want to make a statement that if our audiences see that this may be a little bit overwhelming, because it probably is, you know, and this is a pretty extensive configuration, and my recommendation has always been, as you laid it out, be very methodical. So you need to start it with, you know, separating your client network, your data center network, kind of build it up and try not to just jump into it directly because you will get lost. So I think you have laid out a pretty nice kind of way of doing it. I think we just need to practice a few times, and I think you know, our audiences will get to that moment to get this whole thing.
Definitely. Well, and you're absolutely correct, Young. Having a methodical approach and stepping through it and getting more practice with it is something that'll give all of us a comfort level with using System Center 2012 Virtual Machine Manager Service Pack 1 for bringing in our network fabric. You can see there's a lot of capabilities in terms of how we segment and isolate our various networks based on need, and we can use all or some of that capability depending on our network requirements. And if you'd like to go ahead and try some practice on your own with System Center 2012 and Windows Server 2012, I'd highly encourage you to take advantage of our Cloud Lab environment. It's running on, you don't need any hardware, it runs out on Windows Azure. You can browse out to it by navigating to aka.ms cloud.com/cloudlab and begin your labs on our own Azure platform to step through a lot of what you've been seeing in this series together. And if you need some help along the way, well, take advantage of our Early Experts virtual study hall. On a weekly basis, Young, myself, some of our other technical evangelists here at Microsoft manage a virtual study hall. It gives you a chance on Fridays to grab your lunch, connect with us from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Step through the labs that you're most interested in and then have access to a live expert for assistance as you have questions. At any point in time, you can browse out to find more information on our virtual study hall program at aka.ms/virtual study hall. And if you'd like more information on our Early Experts program, well, if you look down the page just a little bit underneath this video, you'll see the links and information to our Early Experts program along with our Early Experts LinkedIn community group, where you can exchange tips, tricks, and information with other IT pros that are all learning about Windows Server 2012 and preparing for certification on Windows Server 2012 and private cloud. Well, Young, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, I'll see you next time, Keith.
Sure thing. And thank you, everyone, for joining us as well. Please join us in episode six, as we talk about bringing our compute hosts into our cloud fabric as well. And we'll be going through the process of bringing in Hyper-V, VMware, and Citrix compute hosts into VMM so that we can begin to attach those into our private cloud fabric and begin leveraging them from a single consistent management interface. Thanks so much, everyone. Look forward to seeing you next time in our next episode.